You're listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the July-August 2023 issue of Vanity Fair magazine. This is Vanity Fair, Part B. War of the Rosé. They came together in a blaze of passion, then split amid a storm of recriminations. In between, Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie established a hugely profitable wine label on an enchanting estate in the south of France. Now, as lawsuits continue to fly, Mark Seal uncovers the truth about the battle for Miraval. Opening photo, Paradise Lost. A centuries-old wine-making haven, set in its own valley, Miraval became the Jolie-Pitt family's escape from the glare of global fame. Then, when the couple split, it became the subject of a brutal legal tug-of-war. Part 1, The Miracle. The call came in to the concierge at the Hôtel du Cap Édenrock, the fabled luxury hotel on the French Riviera. It was spring 2007, and an assistant to Angelina Jolie said that Jolie and her fiancé, Brad Pitt, were seeking a sizable property in the south of France to rent. So began a glorious holiday, away from the spotlight, for Jolie, Pitt, and their four children, in a sprawling chateau with a staff of 12 in the leafy glades of southwestern France. It was so idyllic that they decided to find an even bigger and more secluded property, not to rent, but to buy. Now, in June 2007, Brad Pitt sat in a twin-engine helicopter, his blue eyes scanning the verdant Provençal landscape. He and Jolie were helicopter hopping with Jonathan Gray, the real estate broker recommended by the hotel. There were six of us, two pilots, Brad and Angelina, their daughter Shiloh, who was one at the time, their American realtor, and myself, says Gray, who had arranged a top-secret three-day tour of the region. They spent their days flying from one address to the next, searching for what Pitt would later describe as a European base for our family, where our kids could run free and not be subjected to the celebrity of Hollywood. They touched down at more than a dozen properties, from cozy chateaux to vast estates, from the Riviera to Provence. Finally, on the morning of the third day, they flew over a magnificent 1,000-acre chateau and vineyard nestled in its own valley. Its name reflected its grandeur, Miraval, French for miracle. They were 50 miles east of Aix-en-Provence, and just outside of the tiny town of Correns, population 830. Brad and Angelina took one look and immediately said, "Yeah, let's go see it," says Gray. Wine has been made at Miraval for centuries. The privileged domain of an Italian noble family for five generations, it was sold in 1972 to the French jazz musician Jacques Lussier. He produced red, white, and rosé wine on the estate and converted an ancient water tower into a recording studio, which attracted the likes of Sting, Sade, and Pink Floyd, who recorded their 1979 hit album, The Wall, there. In 1992, Miraval was purchased by a U.S. Naval Academy engineering graduate named Tom Bove and his family for approximately $5 million. Bove had made a fortune in water treatment before catching what he calls the wine bug. He ramped up the estate's winemaking operation, turning out a small selection of vintages, including Pink Floyd Rosé, which he launched in 2006. Now, Miraval was on the market. Bove, whose wife had died, was ready to move on. Suddenly, a helicopter descended and out stepped two of the world's biggest superstars. Pitt extended his hand for a shake. Jolie had Shiloh in her arms and asked for a place to change the baby, says Bove. Then Jolie, Pitt, and their brokers scouted the vast estate, a wonderland of olive and oak trees, lavender fields, a lake, vineyards on stone terraces, and ancient stone buildings, including a 35-room manor house. Bove sensed that Jolie was allowing her husband to take the lead. She let him talk, says Bove. From my side, she was very gentle. You read all this stuff now, but they were a very nice couple, very sweet and obviously in love with each other, and obviously in love with Miraval. So much so that, as the morning stretched into afternoon, Bove invited everyone to stay for a meal. Brad and I moved the tables around in the garden, and we had lunch, says Bove. Drank the wines of Miraval, which were very good, and then we toured the rest of the property. Before the party climbed back on board the helicopter, Pitt told Bove, "We'll be back." Bove didn't doubt it. It seemed like they wanted to buy it right then. Bove says Pitt then added, "This is the first place we visited where Angie is smiling." Not so long ago, there was no couple in the world bigger than Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. From the moment they met on the set of the 2005 action romance Mr. and Mrs. Smith, their attraction was magnetic, fiery, passionate, incendiary, almost insane. Their divorce would be even fiercer in its intensity. At the center of it all is Miraval. Conceived as a family retreat, it became a high-end commercial enterprise, producing honey, olive oil, a skincare line, and music from Miraval Studios. It all began with a signature wine, Miraval Côte de Provence Rosé, whose revenues reached $50 million in 2021. Even now, impossible to write this without crying, Jolie would say of Miraval in an email she sent Pitt in 2021, 4 years after she filed for divorce. Above all, it is the place we brought the twins home to, and where we were married over a plaque in my mother's memory. A place where I thought I would grow old. But it is also the place that marks the beginning of the end of our family. The story of Miraval parallels the story of Jolie and Pitt. As their legal battle stretches ever onward, their dueling lawsuits offer competing versions of a dark and disturbing saga. In Jolie's telling, it's a tale of alcohol abuse and financial control. For Pitt, it's one of vengeance and retribution. Neither can deny its sheer dramatic force. There are echoes, even, of the movie that brought them together, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, in which they played a married couple, per IMDb, surprised to learn that they are both assassins hired by competing agencies to kill each other. Soon after Pitt and Jolie's visit to Miraval, Bove heard from their brokers, then from lawyers and more lawyers. The overtures became even more urgent when Jolie learned she was pregnant with twins. They wanted to be in ahead of the birth, says Bove. Through their respective holding companies, the couple purchased the property on May 8, 2008, for 25 million euros. 8 days before the deal was signed, Jolie's business manager suggested adding a doomsday clause, stipulating that should the couple ever split, each would have the right to buy the other's share of Miraval. Pitt rejected the idea, according to her cross-complaint, telling his business manager it wasn't necessary for two reasonable people. However, as a byproduct of their supposedly everlasting love, he would insist that he and Jolie later made a pact, agreeing never to sell their respective interest in Miraval without the other's consent. It was a promise Jolie would deny, claiming no such agreement ever existed. Bove agreed to stay on and continue running Miraval's wine operation. He retained 220 acres to operate on his own. I think at that moment Brad wasn't really interested in making wine, Bove says. He liked the idea that he'd have a vineyard, but he really left the wine thing to me. From his office, Bove watched an armada of vehicles deliver the family's possessions, vans and vans arriving with furniture, incredibly packaged by the finest movers, All of it orchestrated by Pitt, says Pove. He came more often because he wanted to get things started with the renovation. Along with the possessions came the staff, nannies from Vietnam, the Congo, and the U.S., according to one published source, along with two personal assistants, not always in residence, a cook, a maid, two cleaners, a plongeur or busboy, and four close protection bodyguards. Extensive renovations began immediately. More Californian as opposed to Provençal, says Bove. The ancient stone chapel became a parking area for the four-wheel all-terrain vehicles the family used to traverse the massive property. And finally came the movie stars and their growing brood of children. They joined an invasion of celebrity home buyers in Provence that would come to include, just within a 100-mile radius of Miraval, Johnny Depp and his then-wife Vanessa Paradis, George Lucas, George Clooney, John Malkovich, and many more. For a time, leading the pack were the most famous of them all, the couple known worldwide as Brangelina. Next photos, Estate of Grace. Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie first spotted Miraval while helicopter hopping in search of a property in the south of France. In 2021, Jolie sold her half to a company controlled by a Russia-born billionaire. And three aerial shots are shown here of the house and grounds. Before the fights, before the combustible court documents, before the lawsuits that have crawled through the courts for 7 long, increasingly toxic years, there was a desk. Not just any desk, but a wildly expensive lacquered desk inspired by a 1920s French design, ordered long distance by Pitt as a birthday present for Jolie. Inside one of its drawers was a special inscription by Pitt, and a constellation, an inlaid mother of pearl, honoring Jolie's Gemini birth sign. The desk was so special that its designer, Frank Pularo, flew from New Jersey to Miraval in May 2008 to install it personally. A furniture maker to billionaires, David Geffen, Larry Ellison, and stars, Jerry Seinfeld, Robert De Niro, Pularo is also a longtime wine enthusiast. The night before the installation of the desk, he had dinner at his Provençal hotel, ordering a bottle of Miraval Red to accompany his rustic roasted pigeon. The next morning at Miraval, Pularo saw a full four-wheeler roaring down the ancient Roman roads. It looked like a dust tornado swirling toward him. When it finally came to a stop, the cloud parted, and there, from the back of the four-wheeler, stepped Brad Pitt and his and Jolie's son Maddox. "Hey, I want to thank you for coming all this way," Pitt said as they went inside. Pularo couldn't help noticing a sketchbook filled with hundreds of Pitt's furniture drawings. As Pitt helped Pularo install the ornate desk, they discussed their shared passion for furniture, and inevitably they talked about wine. When Pularo said he'd had a bottle of Miraval the night before, Pitt asked what he thought of it. "I said, it's a decent sort of rustic wine. It worked well with the roasted pigeon, but I don't think you're going to win any medals." And he kind of chuckled and said, "Well, I don't know much about wine, but I'd like to learn more." I said, "Rhone Valley wines are made out of the same grapes that you're using at Miraval," Pularo recalls. "I'm going to send you a bottle of wine from the Rhone Valley. That would be a wonderful starting point for you to explore what could be done on your property." "Oh, that would be wonderful, but don't send it," Pitt replied. "I'll get it from you when I come back over to the U.S. In 2009, Jolie took a role in the movie Salt, which was shot in New York City. One day, Pularo's phone rang. "Hey, it's Brad. I'd like to take a drive out to see your shop." And the next day, he drove himself out in a rental car by himself. After Pitt toured the shop, Pularo retrieved a bottle from his cellar. "This is the finest wine that can be made in the region where you are living," Pularo told Pitt, handing him the bottle. "It's Chateau de Beaucastel, Chateauneuf du Pape, 1990, a wine of legend. A week or so later, Pollaro received an email from Pitt. He wrote, "That wine sure was terrific, and Angie loved it too." "What wines did Brad like at that point?" I asked. "I think he liked Heineken." Jolie was delighted by the desk, the latest exhibition of affection from Pitt. It went into her office, which Pitt had painstakingly redesigned. "He wanted it exactly right for her," says Gary Bradbury, a Miraval director and head of security. "He thought the world of that woman." Miraval was a love letter to his wife and his children, providing a beautiful life for Angelina and the kids, and shielding them from the intense pressures of celebrity, says Pollaro. On a wall outside the master bedroom, Pitt installed 30 small screens that flashed with images and videos of the children in various stages of development. He built a petting zoo and filled it with rabbits, goats, chickens, and peacocks. He was just completely committed to making Miraval as great as it could be, says Pollaro. Under Pollaro's guidance, Pitt assembled a wine cellar of around 300 bottles from French vineyards. Soon he confided in Pollaro about the state of Miraval's winemaking operations. "We're losing close to a half million euros a year," Pollaro says Pitt told him. Tom Bove insists that the wine operation was profitable when Pitt and Jolie bought it. Even more surprising to Pollaro was what Pitt said next. He wanted Pollaro to help find a solution. Pollaro assembled a list of prominent French winemakers who might serve as consultants. "I told Brad, I'm going to call these people, but they're not going to come to Provence to see Frank Pollaro, the cabinet maker. I need you to be there in person." And he said, "No problem. I want to make a world-class wine." And so the stars of the French wine world made pilgrimages to Miraval to meet the movie star. When the meetings were done, one name rose to the top, Marc Perrin, the producer of Beaucassal Châteauneuf du Pape 1990, the wine of legend that Pollaro had initially given Pitt. Perrin, CEO of the fifth-generation Perrin Wine Family Company, not only makes superb wine, but he and his family also oversee an extensive global distribution network. Arriving at Miraval, Perrin had the same sensation as everyone else. "It was," he says, "heaven." Awestruck by Miraval's majestic setting in its own valley, he told Wine Spectator, "A winemaker could never own this unless it was in the family for something like 20 generations. Pitt invited Perrin to sign on as a consultant. The Perrin family countered by proposing a joint venture. Pitt and Pollaro drove 100 miles north to the Rhône Valley to meet with the Perrin family at their fabled and ancient Chateau de Beaucastel. They toured the estate, and Perrin hosted a dinner with the family's 90-year-old matriarch, who opened a bottle of Chateau de Beaucastel from 1963, Pitt's birth year. As they got in the car to drive home, Pollaro recalls, "Brad said, I think this is it." Soon after that, Perrin said what would turn out to be the magic word, rosé. Once the neglected stepchild of the wine world, rosé was poised for a revolutionary rise. It had started 2 years earlier, in 2006, when Sacha Lequin, son of the legendary Bordeaux winemaker and marketing wizard Alexis Lequin, bought an estate in the heart of Provence called Château d'Esclin. Lequin had long wondered why rosé champagne sold for a premium while still rosé was considered cheap and cheerful. He began experimenting with producing high-quality rosé on his estate. Late one night, he and an American friend were glowing after enjoying some rosé, he says, when they experienced a transcendent moment in the chateau's 19th-century chapel. Two stone cherubs, their heads close together, loomed high on the wall above them. "Look, they're whispering," said the friend. "Whispering angel," said Lequin, who instantly recognized the power of the name. Today, Whispering Angel is the number one best-selling French wine in the United States, according to one industry publication. I said to someone, we've been riding the wave, says Lechin, and they said, no, you created the wave. Unbeknownst to Pitt, Marc Parent had been looking to stake a claim in Rosé. I had this kind of intuition that Rosé was going to happen, he says, and we had been looking as a family for property to buy in Provence for 10 years before. Tom, I'm going to go in another direction, Bove remembers Pitt telling him over the phone. I'm going to work with Marc Parent on something. Brad, I don't know why you're doing that, Bove remembers responding. I thought Miraval was special, and Brad had enough money, and he should maintain the quality of the wine we were producing, Bove says today. When he bought Miraval, we were doing 150,000 bottles of high-quality wine, sold in very high-quality restaurants. Brad and Marc Parent take that 150,000 bottles and run it up to 10 million. He sighs, anyway, vineyards are like your babies, and you always think your babies should go in a certain direction. Looking at the success that Miraval has had, commercially speaking, it was a brilliant idea to combine Brad and Angelina's star power and the distribution skills of Parent. It just wouldn't have been my choice. Let's approach it like a film, and let's make something we can be proud of, Pitt said after he and Jolie had tasted a variety of French rosés with Parent to determine the flavor profile they wanted from Miraval. Most rosés are just light, Parent would tell Wine Spectator. Our idea was that it also had to be juicy and fleshy and fresh. Next photos, chemistry set. From the moment they met, on the set of Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Jolie and Pitt had a fiery connection. On March 6, 2013, the first 6,000 bottles of Miraval Rosé 2012 were offered for sale on the Miraval Provence website. In 5 hours, the offering was completely sold out. It was like strapping yourself to a rocket, Polaro says, of the Perrin family's global distribution network. Every bottle came stamped with a sign of the winemaker solidarity. Bottled by Jolie, Pitt, and Parent, the label read. Their union, initially so fruitful, would quickly sour. On September 19, 2016, Jolie filed for divorce, citing irreconcilable differences and petitioning for custody of their 6 children. It was the opening shot of a war, seemingly without end, and at its center was their most prized asset, Miraval. They were our last great Hollywood couple, the New York Post eulogized after the breakup. Their lineage was Bogart and Bacall, Hepburn and Tracy, Liz and Dick, golden megastars, all with outsized love stories. They began as mere mortals. The daughter of Midnight Cowboy star John Voight and actor Marceline Bertrand, Jolie was a wild child who collected knives and aspired to be a funeral home director. At age 5, she reportedly said she intended to become an actress, a big actress. She won raves for her performance in the 1998 HBO movie Gia, whose tagline, "Everybody saw the beauty, no one saw the pain," seemed apt in light of her fraught relationship with her father. The following year, she broke big in Girl Interrupted, riding a wave of acclaim to the Oscar podium, where all of 24 years old, she accepted the award for Best Supporting Actress. By then, William Bradley Pitt was already a star. He'd arrived in Los Angeles from Springfield, Missouri, in a battered Datsun with $325 in his pocket. The astonishingly handsome son of a trucking company dad and a stay-at-home mom, he had dropped out of college 2 weeks short of graduating with a journalism degree. He told his folks that he was moving to L.A., not to act, but to go into graphic design, so they wouldn't worry. Unlike Jolie, he had no movie star dad, no contacts, nothing but a dream. He stood in the streets in a yellow El Pollo Loco chicken costume, waving a sign to beckon diners inside, and drove exotic dancers to their stripogram appointments. Then Billy Baldwin dropped out of the 1991 Feminist Road picture Thelma and Louise to do the firefighting movie Backdraft. Tapped as a last-minute replacement, Pitt set his scenes ablaze as a hunky hitchhiker who hooks up with Gina Davis before taking off with her cash. In May 2000, Jolie, then 24, married 44-year-old Billy Bob Thornton in Las Vegas. That July, Pitt married Friend star Jennifer Aniston in a $1 million wedding in Malibu. By the time Jolie and Pitt met 4 years later on the set of Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Jolie and Thornton had divorced, though not before she adopted an orphaned baby boy from Cambodia, whom she named Maddox. Pitt and Aniston were still very much a couple, until he collided with Jolie. Pitt and Jolie's chemistry, on and off screen, was too combustible to contain. Rumors of an affair swirled from the set, and for months after filming wrapped. In January 2005, Pitt and Aniston issued a joint statement announcing plans to split. On the weekend Aniston filed for divorce, Pitt and Jolie posed for a W Magazine portfolio, shot by Stephen Klein, portraying them as a Mad Men-era married couple, complete with fictional children. In one image, Pitt pits Jolie to the bed during what appears to be an alcohol-fueled argument. "We're divorced, and you can see why," Aniston would later tell Vanity Fair. "There's a sensitivity chip that's missing." Next, photos, Grapes of Wrath. Pitt and his partner, Marc Perrin, walk Miraval's grounds. Jolie seemed to refer to this ad, pictured here in court documents, saying it reminded me of painful times. The next month, a photographer for Us Weekly magazine snapped Jolie and Pitt walking the Diani Beach on the coast of Kenya with Maddox, then 3 years old. "He just out of the blue called him Dad," Jolie would tell Vogue in 2007. "So that was probably the defining moment when he decided we would all be a family." Brad and Angelina's secret love trip, screamed the cover line of the May 9, 2005 issue of Us. We had the worldwide scoop and the debut of Brangelina, Us publisher Jan Winner would later write. The tipster was Angelina. Jolie and Pitt did everything big, the Post reported, adding that while they were each massive stars, together they were an epic force multiplier. "And when they had sex, well, it sounded like a wounded animal, like someone being killed," read a tabloid report about their Kenyan getaway, when the noise emanating from their $2,000 a night suite was supposedly so loud that worried guards grabbed weapons and rushed to their door. Not content merely to succeed at the box office and on the awards circuit, they became international crusaders for a better world. Jolie became a special envoy for the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, making dozens of field trips to global hotspots. And together, they founded the Jolie Pitt Foundation to fund children's causes around the world. After moving through a succession of mega mansions and remote hideaways, they at long last found a family retreat at Miraval. They decamped to this sublime estate when it was time for Jolie to give birth to what the media would call the Wonder Twins, Knox and Vivienne. They were born at 6:27 and 6:28 p.m. on July 12, 2008, in Lanval, a seaside pediatric hospital in Nice. Almost immediately, the paparazzi descended. Magazines were waging a bidding war for rights to the first official photographs of the twins, which People and Hello magazines would share for a combined $14 million, donated to the Jolie Pitt Foundation. Meanwhile, paparazzi surrounded the hospital, vying for the first pirated photos. Just before 4 a.m. on July 19, 2008, Jolie, Pitt, and the newborn twins snuck out of the hospital in a gray Volkswagen minibus. That sent the paparazzi rushing to Miraval to await their arrival. The front gate was like the Cannes Film Festival, says Gary Bradbury, packed with paparazzi. Some photographers, clad in camouflage battle apparel, snuck onto the sacred grounds, determined to get a shot of the couple and their twins. As the photo op turned into an invasion, Pitt came outside to investigate. "What's going on, guys?" he asked, according to Bradbury. The French and British security squad swept the woods, where they found two photographers hiding beneath the dense brush. A brawl ensued with one of the photographers, who later claimed self-defense. Bradbury says he was trying to defuse the situation when the photographer bit him. He was screaming, saying he was HIV positive, and nearly bit the top of my finger off. That summer, a film director arrived at Miraval, Quentin Tarantino. He brought along the script for his World War II movie Inglourious Basterds, hoping to talk Pitt into playing Lieutenant Aldo Raine, the tough-talking leader of a troop of Nazi-hunting soldiers. Pitt was prepared to say no, but first he broke out a bottle of wine for Tarantino. "We talked about the backstory. We talked about movies till the wee hours of the night," Pitt would later say at the Cannes Film Festival. One bottle led to another. "And all I know is I got up the next morning and I saw five empty bottles of wine lying on the floor. Five, and apparently I agreed to do the movie." Five bottles of wine might have been unusual, but the drinking was not. Pitt once said he couldn't remember a day since I got out of college when I wasn't boozing or had a spliff or something, and I'm running from feelings. I'm really, really happy to be done with all of that. I mean, I stopped everything except boozing when I started my family. In May 2013, Jolie opened up about undergoing a preventative mastectomy in the New York Times. A little more than a year later, she and Pitt were married in Miraval's ancient chapel before 20 friends, family members, and their six children. Maddox, then 13, Pax, 10, Zahara, 9, Shiloh, 8, and Knox and Vivienne, 6. The children wrote the vows, decorated their mother's dress, and threw rose petals to celebrate the union. Miraval Rosé was served at the reception, where Jolie sipped non-alcoholic Bosnian rose petal juice. Before the wedding, as yet another token of his devotion, Pitt had given his bride something close to his heart. When they bought Miraval, Pitt had taken a 60% stake in the winemaking enterprise and the estate, while Jolie took 40%. Pitt had poured millions into Miraval, riding the rosé wave and expanding the business. Sales had grown 300%. There were waiting lists for the wine. The estate would soon have an estimated worth of $164 million. By the time of the wedding, Jolie had stopped investing, according to Pitt's court declaration, though Jolie would deny this. Nevertheless, Pitt transferred 10% of his share to her in December 2013 for the sum of £1, never paid, according to the court documents. Now they were equal partners. Part 2, The War. And that sum, rather, was €1. Part 2, The War. Very few locals in Curran, the village outside Miraval, actually met the movie stars, but they talk about Pitt as if he were one of their own, won over by his passion for toiling in the vineyards alongside his workers, not as the boss, but as their equal. For Jolie, Miraval was a place for us to visit together and a place to hold diplomatic and humanitarian meetings, she would write. She spent much of her Miraval time in her office or in her bedroom doing UN work, says Bradbury. Pitt, meanwhile, was increasingly absorbed in winemaking and improving their historic property. "I'm a farmer now," he would tell Wine Spectator. He reveled in his fields, sometimes grabbing a chainsaw and helping his team of laborers cut down dead trees and trim vines. During the reconstruction of the ancient chateau, He'd spend 8 to 12 hours a day with architects, designers, stonemasons, plumbers, and electricians, says Bradbury. At 1 o'clock, he'd tell me to give him a knock so he could get the quads ready for the children to ride on the estate. Or he would take the kids fishing on the lake, which Sting had stocked with carp during his Miraval recording sessions. He made sure he was available for his children at all times. Often Pitt and Bradbury would put in long days of manual labor. Angie would come out and bring lunch, and we'd all sit there and have a picnic. It was very lovey-dovey, quite romantic. I used to take my sandwich and walk away. It was their time. Miraval became Pitt's secret garden, a place where he could be himself instead of the global phenomenon known as Brad Pitt. He'd hike and jog through Miraval's roads, fields, and forest. Or he'd sit on a rock with his guitar and a smoke, his vineyard spreading out in all directions before him. He had a vision of turning Miraval into something beyond wine, an artist colony centered around Miraval Studios. On Tuesday, September 13th, 2016, the family gathered for what someone on the estate would call the Last Supper. That week, Pitt and Jolie had each flown in from far-flung locales. Pitt from the coast of Croatia, where he was developing a multi-billion dollar, ecologically responsible luxury resort. Jolie from a three-day visit to a camp in Jordan, housing 60,000 Syrian refugees. Now, they were both back with their kids in the place they loved most. The family came together on the lawn overlooking the new soccer field, beneath the gaze of stone cupids and ancient olive trees. They ate dinner at a long outdoor table. The next day, they flew off into ruin. Jolie and the children rode in their 12-passenger luxury bus to the private jet terminal in Nice, where Pitt, who had been in meetings that day on Miraval business, was waiting. After swiftly being cleared by police and customs officers, they boarded a chartered silver Bombardier Global Express. It departed at 7:42 p.m., headed for Burbank, California. Roughly 8 hours after takeoff, the plane touched down in International Falls, Minnesota. The single runway, Einerson Field Falls International Airport, a 10-minute drive from the Canadian border, is a favorite spot for private jets from Europe and Asia to quickly refuel and clear customs and immigration before continuing on to their final destinations. It was in this remote location at 9:12 p.m. on September 14th that the Brangelina Comet fell to Earth. Tensions between Pitt and Jolie had been boiling for about a year. They tried to keep their arguments between themselves and had made a point to never argue in front of the children. Until the plane. Even though associates say they've never seen Pitt intoxicated, and I've been there for 15 years, says Bradbury, on the plane he was drinking quite a bit. It would be years before details of what happened on the plane came to light. For now, only a few key facts were available. The plane landed in International Falls. Pitt had been drinking. Husband and wife had a fight in which he became aggressive. The interior of the plane was damaged. Wine and beer were spilled. The wife and children were frightened. The family was instantly torn apart. And the authorities were alerted, by whom nobody seemed to know. News of the altercation quickly went viral. Brad Pitt, under investigation for child abuse, TMZ reported on September 22nd. Added people, Pitt is accused of getting verbally abusive with one of the couple's kids, as well as getting physical, said a source with knowledge of the situation. An anonymous caller, identifying herself only as a woman dating a guy who worked on the tarmac, told a Minneapolis radio station her boyfriend could hear the screaming even before the doors opened. Pitt knew he had effed up. Just how badly soon became clear. His wife and kids checked into a hotel. And now he went home alone to the 6,700 square foot home he'd shared with his family in LA's Los Feliz neighborhood. The Los Angeles Department of Children and Family Services, DCFS, had opened an investigation about his behavior during the flight. Because the incident occurred on an airplane, the FBI launched a similar investigation. Then, on September 19, 2016, 5 days after the plane incident, Jolie filed for divorce. She cited irreconcilable differences and asked for full custody of their 6 children, with Pitt granted visitation rights. Although an FBI agent provided the U.S. Attorney's Office with copies of a probable cause statement related to this incident, according to a redacted FBI report, Pitt was never charged and the investigation was closed. After reviewing the document, a representative of the United States Attorney's Office discussed the merits of this investigation with the case agent, the FBI report read. It was agreed by all parties that criminal charges in this case would not be pursued due to several factors. The matter seemed to be done. No further details of what happened on the plane emerged. Until 6 years later, someone identifying herself only as Jane Doe filed several Freedom of Information Act requests to access the FBI's incident report. Several years ago, while a plaintiff, her then husband, and their children, who were all minors at the time, were traveling via private aircraft, the husband allegedly physically and verbally assaulted plaintiff and the children, who have experienced lasting physical and mental trauma as a result of the assault, a judge's summary of the FOIA request reads. A judge rejected Jane Doe's request to keep the entire FOIA lawsuit sealed. News outlets then began speculating that Jane Doe was in fact Jolie. An attorney for Jane Doe, while refusing to reveal her client's identity to preserve the family's privacy, told a reporter for Politico, "Our position is that victims and survivors should be able to access federal agency records of crimes they experienced or reported, as is common at the state level, so they can advocate for help and trauma care and legal protection for their children and themselves." In August 2022, a redacted version of the 53-page FBI report surfaced in the media. A wave of headlines followed as news outlets sifted through the explosive allegations. By then, the legal war over Miraval was underway. On February 17, 2022, Pitt sued Jolie and Nouvelle, the company that held her shares of the Chateau Miraval estate, and amended the complaint 4 months later. In October, Jolie filed a cross-complaint against Pitt and his holding company, Mondo Bongo, named after the song he and Jolie so seductively danced to in Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Jolie said she had never before publicly revealed her reasons for divorcing Pitt and selling her share of Miraval. But when Pitt filed this lawsuit seeking to reassert control over Jolie's financial life and compel her to rejoin her ex-husband as a frozen-out business partner, Pitt forced Jolie to publicly defend herself on these issues for the first time, the cross-complaint said. In it, she laid out her side of the story, including what happened on that plane on September 14, 2016, in graphic terms. The scene that follows is difficult to fathom. Jolie would reportedly tell the FBI it didn't feel real. Her complaint and the redacted FBI report suggest that the fuse was lit before they arrived at the airport, when Pitt had a confrontation with one of the children, believed to be Maddox. After takeoff, Pitt allegedly accused Jolie of being too deferential to the children. A source close to Pitt says he felt Jolie was trying to drive a wedge between him and his kids. On the plane, Jolie had a glass of wine. Pitt didn't appear incapacitated, Jolie would tell the FBI. adding that he could drink a bottle of vodka without losing functionality. 90 minutes into the flight, her cross complaint says, Pitt told Jolie to come here and directed her to the back of the plane away from the children. There, he pulled her into the bathroom and began yelling at her. He allegedly grabbed Jolie by the head and shook her, and then grabbed her shoulders and shook her again, pushing her into the bathroom wall. Pitt also punched the ceiling 4 times. The commotion caught the attention of one or more of the children. Are you okay, Mommy? They asked. No, Pitt allegedly responded. Mommy's not okay. She's ruining this family. She's crazy. When one of the kids confronted him, he lunged at the child, according to the complaint. Jolie grabbed him from behind to hold Pitt back, but he threw himself into the airplane's seats to get her off him, the complaint says. As a result, she suffered injuries to her back and elbow. The children rushed in and all bravely tried to protect each other. Before it was over, Pitt choked one of the children and struck another in the face. Some of the children pleaded with Pitt to stop. They were all frightened. Many were crying, according to Jolie's complaint. Over the remainder of the flight, Pitt continued to rant, and at one point poured beer on Jolie and the children as they tried to sleep under blankets. Jolie claimed, adding that it caused $25,000 worth of alcohol damage to the interior of the plane. When the plane landed in International Falls, Jolie told Pitt she and the children were going to a hotel to rest, and they could resume their flight to California the next day. But Pitt wouldn't have it, according to her complaint. Nobody was getting off the plane, he allegedly said, although he did reportedly disembark to smoke a cigarette before the plane continued on to Burbank. He eventually fell asleep, giving Jolie time to devise a plan. She spoke to her children first, asking them not to intervene no matter what Pitt did. She then woke her husband up. As the plane landed in Burbank, Jolie told Pitt that she was taking the kids to a hotel, but Pitt allegedly refused to let the family leave the plane for 20 minutes. You're not taking my effing kids, he yelled, according to the FBI report, and he shook Jolie by the head and shoulders. Don't hurt her, one of the children begged. He let her go, but not without calling Jolie a bitch, her complaint claims. And the authorities were alerted. Representatives of DCFS were reportedly waiting on the tarmac when the plane arrived. Who contacted them, no one can confirm. According to a source close to Pitt, Brad was drinking and the confrontation got out of hand. He was absolutely wrong in how he behaved, but immediately apologized and acknowledged that he had crossed a line, which he will always regret, and right away took steps to address this and try to make amends. Next photo, air pressure. Pitt, Jolie, and their 6 children arriving at LAX in 2014, 2 years before the altercation on a private plane. And the plane is also pictured here. Alone in Los Angeles, Pitt vowed to stop drinking. His playground had become a battleground, and his passion for wine had become his poison. He slept on a friend's floor. He looked in the mirror and didn't like what he saw. He found a lifeline in fellow leading man Bradley Cooper, who had spoken out about his recovery from drug and alcohol abuse and was known for helping others. I got sober because of this guy, and every day has been happier ever since, Pitt would declare, while accepting an award in 2020. He attended a private and selective Alcoholics Anonymous men's group, whose members he could trust not to reveal details of his addiction and, soon after, his divorce. It began with a fight over custody rights. Jolie wanted sole physical custody of the children. Pitt wanted joint custody. Less than a week after the plane incident, TMZ quoted Pitt as saying that Jolie had unleashed hell by allegedly spinning stories about his anger issues fueled by weed and alcohol that attracted unwelcome attention from the paparazzi. On September 30th, 2016, the couple reached a temporary agreement. Jolie would have full custody. Pitt could visit, but only on several conditions. He had to agree to counseling and testing for alcohol and drugs, and the first meeting would be monitored by a therapist. That December, Pitt's lawyers filed a motion to keep the documents in the escalating custody case sealed. Jolie appears to be determined to put in the public eye any allegations she can without regard to the impact on the minor children, his lawyers wrote. In January, Jolie agreed to keep court documents sealed, but protested that the move was intended to prevent her from speaking publicly about his behavior. Pitt was terrified that the public will learn the truth, she was quoted as saying in court documents. 18 months passed. In June 2018, a judge in the divorce set a schedule for Pitt to spend more time with his children, advising, according to court papers, the children not having a relationship with their father is harmful to them. Still, the legal tug of war continued. That August, Jolie's attorney, the prominent divorce lawyer Laura Wasser, left the case. The situation had gotten too venomous, TMZ reported. Just days after Wasser's departure became public, Jolie accused Pitt of not paying meaningful child support. According to a source close to Pitt, he paid $3 million in initial bills and pays millions more per year in child support, and also loaned Jolie $8 million of the $25.4 million she spent on director Cecil B. DeMille's former home. On April 12, 2019, the couple were ruled legally single, but they continued to wrangle over custody. After many delays, they finally agreed to a private trial overseen by John Oderkirk, the retired judge who had married them at Miraval. The proceedings lasted months and featured an F-ton of witnesses, experts, therapists, and other people who have been with the kids and around them, a source told the New York Post. Jolie offered to have three of the children, each over the required age of 14, testify about their father's behavior. The offer was declined. In May 2021, Oderkirk made a tentative decision to award Pitt joint custody of their five minor children. The eldest, Maddox, was now 19. According to Pitt's lawsuit, Oderkirk also issued a detailed report finding Jolie not credible, though a source familiar with the matter says he never used those words. Jolie was livid, a source would tell the Daily Mail. She said Oderkirk failed to adequately consider evidence of domestic abuse or fully disclose recent professional relationships with members of Pitt's legal team. A panel of three judges later removed Oderkirk from the case and vacated his rulings. As the war over the kids dragged on, an equally nasty custody battle erupted over Miraval. Dear Brad, Jolie emailed Pitt on January 21st, 2021, I have reached a painful decision with a heavy heart. She began with the good, how excited she'd been to buy Miraval, her fond memories of the place. Then she zeroed in on the bad, how it marked the beginning of the end of their family, and a business that is centered around alcohol. I have tried to stay open to the business, to see it as something that could be positive for our family, and have therefore not walked away, she wrote. I see now how you have really wanted me out and will most likely be pleased to receive this email. Jolie had enlisted Christophe Céline, former CEO of the venerable Bordeaux wine brand Domaine Baron de Rothschild Lafitte, as her advisor and representative, but her frustrations mounted all the same. Over time, Pitt completely froze her out, her attorneys would claim in court papers, adding that he categorically refused Jolie's request to distribute any portion of the winery's profits to her. even though she said she had invested some $60 million of her own money into it over the years. Her investment was actually $38 million, says a source close to Pitt. All dividends were reinvested back into covering cost and further improving the property and the business. Since their separation, she wrote in the email to Pitt, she had seen lots of inconsiderate behavior, money spent in ways that I would not have approved, and decisions made that I was not consulted on. She was especially shaken by the recent imagery that was released to sell the alcohol, presumably referring to a Miraval ad campaign featuring a black and white photo of Pitt asleep on a lounge chair. It reminded me of painful times. Their visions of the company were incompatible, and she wanted out. She would join him in selling the whole thing off, or she would accept a complete buyout of my share in the property and business. She asked him to decide one way or another within 2 weeks. Miraval, for me, died September 2016, she wrote, referring to the date of the plane meltdown, and everything I have seen in the years since has sadly confirmed that. Pitt opted to buy her half of Miraval, and in February 2021, they agreed that he would pay Jolie $54.5 million for her entire interest, including undistributed profits. The deal might have happened, if not for a dispute over a non-disclosure agreement. This article will be continued in the next installment. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both Parts A and B are available as a podcast. Opening and closing music by Calexico.